Hi, I'm Stephen John Drew from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, because I want to be an asteroid miner. Hey, but everybody calls me SP. Your reporters for this special summer edition of the Starling Tribune, looking back at episode 10 from season 1 of Legends of Tomorrow, are Chris.
We don't have hearts. Where does that leave us?
And Neil.
No wonder my kids started the company that manufactures evil robots.
This was a good one for a few quotes. Thanks for picking those out, guys. Hey, we are just a few Gunna Geekers that normally discuss the CW TV show Arrow. This podcast, by the way, is recorded on Thursday, August 4th, 2016, live on Geeks.live. Just a little reminder that I'm just a relative comic newbie. I grew up mostly a sci-fi fan, but I've started my comic collecting files and I'm catching up to the in-depth comic lore, thanks to folks like Chris.
Hooray, comics!
And Neil!
And SP, you have invigorated me and motivated me to bag and board again, sir. Oh, yeah.
Hashtag bag and board.
Hashtag bag and board.
Hey, while we normally cover the CW show Arrow during this offseason, we're talking about Legends of Tomorrow, another CW network show that is DC Comics based, as well as DC TV news articles and announcements that have dropped during this offseason and that will impact future episodes of Arrow when it returns for season 5. Plus, it will definitely contain spoilers for the current episode that we're watching of Legends of Tomorrow because, well, let's face it, it aired about a half year ago, as well as slight spoilers for the upcoming episodes in this season since they have all already aired. So consider yourself warned. If you're new to the Starling Tribune and you're new to the show, thank you for joining us. Thank you very much. Neil, wouldn't you say thank you?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. All this Arrow goodness and Legends Tomorrow and Flash and Supergirl and maybe Constantine. Yeah, welcome.
There you go, Chris, right?
No, go away. We don't want you.
The curmudgeon. Hashtag no Laurel, no Arrow.
Go away.
If you like our content, please feel free to drop by our podcast network, Collective, as it is known, at www.gunnageek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other similar geeky content. But that's enough of the preamble, enough of the platitudes. Gentlemen, let's get down to business. Neil, please run down the specs for this episode.
Thank you, SP. All right, folks. Tonight, we are talking Season 1, Episode 10 of DC's Legends of Tomorrow titled Progeny, air date of April 7th, 2016. The director was David Geddes. Now, aside from two shorts, this is his only directing credit, but he has 93 different cinematographer credits. So
wow.
He knows his way behind a camera. But first time calling all the shots. So I was definitely keeping an eye out for what I thought of the directing on this one. As far as Legends of Tomorrow goes, he has this one directing credit and 11 cinematographer credits. So this reminds me of calling up somebody else on the crew, especially like Bam Bam from Arrow, doing all the fight choreography and then being elevated up to the director's seat. As a cinematographer, you may have seen his work before. So he's done 6 episodes of The Last Ship, 12 of Under the Dome as the director of photography, 7 episodes of Almost Human, 2 of Fringe, and, well, 11 as the director of photography, as well as the 2 of cinematography. 16, cinematographer for Supernatural, go SBN, and don't say it, Chris. 1 of Constantine, 1 of Forever, plus credits on The Mentalist, Revolution, Sleepy Hollow, Nikita, Alphas, and a lot more. The writers for this episode, first writer was Phil Klemmer. Now, that name should be familiar, especially if you've seen any of the YouTube shorts. He usually has a bit on there. He is one of the executive producers of Legends of Tomorrow and a key member of the production team. His credits on LOT include 15 episodes as executive producer, 16 as developed by credit, 5 as a writer, and 2 as the teleplay. Now, before this, he also had 3 credits writing on Forever, 22 developed by credits on Tomorrow People, another CW show, 12 episodes writing of Chuck, 6 on Veronica Mars, and others. His co-writer for this episode, Mark Guggenheim, a man who needs no introduction if you are a fan of the show. We've talked a lot about him before, and he is one of the key figures in the DC TV universe, along with Kreisberg. He is the executive producer of Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, and before that, No Ordinary Family, Flash Forward, and a ton of writing credits. Not only Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, but into video games, into comics, into movies, and a lot more. So definitely two heavy hitters writing this kind of pivotal episode.
Right. So for those that don't know, Klemmer is basically the showrunner for the show. I know you've got Greg Berlanti involved, you got Mark Guggenheim involved, you got Andrew Kreisberg, you got Chris Fedek, and you've got Sarah Schlechter, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. So all great in the executive producer box, and they all kind of mingle back and forth between the other DC shows, but Klemmer would be considered the showrunner. So he co-wrote the episode. That says a lot about the pivotal nature of this episode, in addition to Mark Guggenheim. So, we've got this great episode. Let's take a look at the ratings like we do every week. A rating for episode 10 of season 1 of Legends of Tomorrow is 1.88. Aww. For those new to watching the show or Starling Tribune, we've been talking about this the whole season. This is kind of the beginning slide to the end. It started off a lot higher and it ended up a little lower, but it was renewed. They saw a promise in the show, CW did, and CW's got a lineup basically Monday through Friday now of comic book shows, and this is one of them that they chose to go with. I think they've got, we'll talk about it at the end of the episode. There's some news stories as to where Legends of Tomorrow is heading in season 2. So that's great. Now, one thing that we talk about with the ratings is how it compared to the other DC shows that are on TV. Well, the only other episode that actually aired the same week was Arrow, and it was 11:59, and it was basically Laurel's death. So that is what inspired Chris to start hashtag no Laurel, no Arrow. And the drive continues to this day to bring back Laurel into the DC universe. And basically, she's coming back in one way, shape, manner, or form, as we talked about last week.
She's the best.
Yes. The other shows, Flash and Supergirl, were not on this week. And I believe this is still spring break time. It is April 7th, so the first week of April. So we should start seeing the shows sync back up as we drive into episode 16 of Legends of Tomorrow at the end of the season. We start our actual discussion of the episode every week off with how the title actually pertains to the show. So for that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris so he can start off the discussion.
So if you guys remember, the title of this episode is Progeny. And for those that aren't familiar, the definition is a descendant or the descendants of a person, animal, or plant, or offspring. We talked a lot about kids and legacy this week. We had let's start simply. Ray's supposed unknown offspring, where he thought that he had fathered a bunch of children that led to the robot revolution. We had a Rip's son, who always comes into play each week. And then, of course, we had Kendra and Carter's son, Aldous, who came into play. And, of course, the son of the warlord himself, or the son who would become the warlord. I believe his name is Per Degaton.
Yep.
They were all the kids that were the focus of the main theme of this show. So Progeny pretty much relates to this legacy through children.
I can't argue with that. That's basically sums it up, Chris.
Yeah, you had a lot of the kids in there, but I would also say Progeny also expands to the robots, because they are the future of humanity.
Skynet, man. It's coming.
They're Ray's offspring as much as the kids were. He created them and he gave birth through the Adam suit. So yeah, good call.
I'm on once in a while. Blind squirrel finds a nut, you know?
Good job, sir. Good job.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So another thing that we go into every week is the fight scenes. I think there was just one main battle scene, fight scene, and that was at the end around the ship. And for that, I just have to say, does Gideon not have any sort of early warning technology on board at all?
Gideon just wasn't paying attention. There was too much cool stuff going on inside, so the sensors were turned off outside so she could watch all the drama unfolding inside.
Not a very good AI if it can't multitask.
I think she was just replaying all of Sarah's dreams that she recorded to video.
Wouldn't we all?
Just saying.
That is one lucky nurse.
Yeah, it's possible too.
I'll be in my bunk.
What'd you guys think of the battle, though?
I kind of figured Ray was going to get schooled when he's going out there with technology that's 100 years old compared to what is out there now, and it's kind of fun to watch him go, oh yeah, this is a bad idea, and get shot down. But somehow he's flown far away and gets shot down and lands right in front of Kendra, which I don't understand.
Because plot?
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 That's nitpicking. I mean, if you really want to nitpick, there's a few things you could. I saw one of the things that really I didn't notice at first until the second time I watched it was, before they go and fight, nobody's in costume. When they go and fight, everyone is magically in costume. During this emergency, they have had time to go do their costumes and change their hairstyles.
It happens, you know, it's part of the changing booth that they all go through. Matter of fact, I think Ray's suit actually changes his hair while he's fighting.
Yeah, but what is that? How's Sarah's hair get changed from being straightened to having a slight curl to it?
She came back from the dead.
As she's walking out, she poofs it.
It's like, what's her name in Battlestar Galactica?
Six?
Starbuck.
Oh.
No, Starbuck. She came back to life and is an angel, right?
Spoiler alert. Jeez, don't ruin Battlestar for people. Oh, wait, the finale did that already. Never mind.
Yeah, fair enough. What I love is when Jefferson walks out in the Firestorm outfit, he has his badass face on. He gets all scowling and he walks out. He's, oh yeah, we're going to kick some butt. I'm just like, really? That's... No, it's...
That was a special effects saving measure to have him already transformed when he walked outside, too. Save some of that FX budget.
He's a football player, right? He plays football, or he did, and that's just his game face. That's all he knows. He hasn't been...
All right, it's his game face. I'll give you that.
That works.
But the other thing, though, is he can't hold his own for very long. He calls for help. Like, guys, turn these robots off. I can't deal with them. Turn them off. Turn them off!
I cannot wait until next season when he actually figures out how to transmute matter as Firestorm should. I think he did it right at the end of this first season.
Oh, yeah.
This fight in season two looks very different. He's like, pile of salt, pile of salt, pile of water, and we're done.
And we're done.
Exactly.
I'd turn it to gold, then you can sell it.
The reason why you normally get salt in the comics is he has to memorize the molecular structure. And the NaCl covalently bonded is really easy, so he's just got it stuck there. It's a go-to, so.
Yeah, if there's one thing I remember from high school chemistry, it is covalent bonds in NaCl.
I'm having flashbacks right now.
Yeah. Another great thing that we can remember from this episode is we are in 2147. We're back to the future, boys!
Woo!
Yay.
But everybody's still wearing wool. It's the wool suits. They're still good.
Some trends never die.
And it's Vancouver that they're all going to smell like wet dog. I'm sorry. That's what I thought.
I didn't see any dogs. Are there any dogs left in 2147?
Oh, dog wool suits. Nasty. Oh, no. It's even worse.
There's a bunch of stuff that happened in this episode. Neil, what's your most memorable moment?
I think it was the showdown between Rip and Protagaton, where you know that little bee is evil. When he's just egging him on, he's like, no, you're not going to shoot me. You're weak. You know what? Yeah, Randall Savage just told me how to tell who a killer is. Go, you're not going to do it. Meh. And you're just like, oh, dude. All right. He's evil. He is Damien. Just do it. Just do it. Prove him. Do it to prove him wrong.
So you think he should have pulled the trigger, Chris? Do you think Rip Hunter should have pulled the trigger and killed that little kid?
That's a line Rip's not ready to go to. I don't know if he should have or not, because we all know time's going to do what time wants to do, regardless of what you do to try and change it. We've seen that throughout the show. We gotta change time. It doesn't really do anything. It has its own mind. I mean, this whole concept is basically, would you go back in time? Would you kill Hitler as a baby? Let's put it in our own context. I don't know, man. I don't know if I have it in me.
The argument that they make, especially Stein, throughout this entire episode is you are trading the life of one child for another. And I think what they forget is this guy goes on, he's worse than Hitler. He goes on to kill billions. Billions. So it's not a one for one. It's the goods of the many outweigh the needs of the few, right? And they weren't doing the right math.
Thank you, Spock. You have to be able to put yourself in the right mindset to be able to do it, though. That's the thing. And I don't know that Rip can kill a kid when it's his kid he's trying to save. Yes, I know the kid is evil and is showing he's evil, but I don't know. It takes cojones to kill a kid, I would think.
You have to fast forward a little bit to the end of the episode. Kid kills his own dad, and that's how Vandal Savage takes over, basically, because he acts as the kid's proxy. But the kid, per Degadon, is in charge, and Vandal Savage is in charge. Two very bad people. Here's the flip side, though. If Rip Hunter would have killed per Degadon, would Ter Degadon, the father, been on a rampage to avenge his son and made it worse? Even if it was just Sarah sharpshooting him and assassinating per Degadon on the street when they kidnapped him originally.
You can make an argument. I thought about that as well. You don't know. It is one of, if time truly is going to do what it's going to do, then why is this even an option in the first place? If you're going to do it, it's just to make yourself feel good. But if it's not going to have any impact, and we saw that by pulling per Degadon out of the timeline, Gideon kept saying, yeah, no impact, minimal impact, everything's still going to happen. So really, and again, this comes down to our favorite captain. Hey, dude, this may not be a good strategy that you're pursuing. Just may not be.
Well, I think he hoped to turn him near the end, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look at the good in everybody. That could have been it.
Really?
Well, it's a possibility. Rip Hunter is... He is a, what is he, a good time lord or whatever he's called?
Time master.
Time master.
So he's not so mastery this episode, really.
No, but I mean, that's where he's from. And they're all about protecting time, right? And they're protecting time for the good of society to get them where they are in the future. So he does have some altruistic views to him in order to do that. You can't go through some of the things that he has gone through and made the decisions that he's had to make in order to have time progress the way it is supposed to progress. You have to have that greater than self viewpoint. And if you have that mindset, thinking that this kid could be turned could be part of it. I can see that. Now, personally, I would have just killed the kid, but that's just me.
Well, and here we go. Chris, kill the kid, yay or nay?
I couldn't do it, I don't think.
Okay, and here we go. Do you consider yourself a hero, SP?
A hero? No. For killing him? It's a no-win situation.
No. Just in general. And this is the... I'm just going to skip ahead. The line of the episode actually goes to Mick Rory, who says, killing a kid, not very hero-like. And that's a hugely bad Mick Rory impersonation.
That was pretty good.
We'll allow it.
These guys are heroes. And regardless, unless they are going to be fallen heroes or anti-heroes, which they aren't. None of them have been set up that way. I would even argue that Snart isn't a true anti-hero, that the heroes will not kill the kid, period. It's never going to happen.
Well, there's that, but are they really heroes? I mean, they're legends. I don't know if that's necessarily equating to heroes.
They've set themselves up as heroes, though. I think they have. And that's why I was asking you guys, do you consider yourselves heroes? Right? It's superheroes or whatnot. And it's a stupid, stupid question. Okay, I'll take that back. But they consider themselves heroes doing the right thing, trying to, you know, do what's right, do what's good. As a result, they won't deviate from that character paradigm which they've established. My two cents.
You've got an assassin who used to kill people. She's not doing it anymore because it's her path to redemption, basically, is to not be what she was before. Things like that. You've got folks there that don't really want to kill anymore. I mean, Snart wasn't really much of a killer. He was more the thrill of the hunt and the thrill of stealing stuff, more so than it was, aha, you're dead.
Yeah, we never really went through his motivations of why he agreed to fake killing Mick. And I still don't see that. Like, his statements in this episode, well, you guys told me to do it, so I went and did it. Really? You can't think for yourself? That was still a little bit of a stretch. I mean, we got to where we are today from there, so okay.
Well, I think in part he saw Mick was a loose end that was going to potentially cause problems within the team and potentially get somebody killed. And he had to get him out of the way, and he couldn't kill his friends while he didn't actually do anything other than strand him. But Mick was a danger to everyone. He was coming unwound.
Yeah, he at the time. Yeah, although they didn't help matters, especially Rip Hunter.
Well, remember, Rip never really wanted him. He wanted Snart, and he just had to get...
I know, but if you have him, then you don't cause him to do something stupid like he did. Or, you know, eventually become Kronos because of basically Rip's actions. Rip's words caused ultimately what happened, in my opinion.
But ironically, him becoming Kronos makes him a better team member later on.
Yeah.
Yep. He's got mad time skills. So that works. Hey, guys, let's change track here for a second. Bryce, we got Kaylee.
I know. Oh. That's so cool. Jewel Sate. For those that don't know her, she was on Firefly, she was on Stargate Atlantis, she's been in a lot of onesie-twosie geek-related cameos. She's a new mother, by the way, right now, and has directed, I believe, is trying to produce some things, but she's been on a lot of geek-related stuff on and off the Sci-Fi Channel, Fox Channel, and it was awesome to see her in this. And I only got a little twinge, like, aw, that's all we're going to get from Jewel Sate on this. And she lives in Vancouver, from what I understand, right? So she could easily pop on set whenever.
She just got married as well, too.
Right. Yes, she did. And wonderful Instagram following. So, you know, go over there and check her out there. But yeah, Kaylee was the mechanic on Serenity, which was the ship on Firefly. And then just her career snowballed from everybody likes Kaylee. Kaylee!
Was it L.A.? L.A. something. It was a bunch of struggling actors and singers all living in an apartment building in Los Angeles. She played the nasty one in that bunch, and she was a lot of fun to watch. She was just mean and vicious, and she chewed the scenery. It was awesome.
How to plan an orgy in a small town?
No, I was trying to avoid talking about that one, but thanks for bringing it up.
Excuse me, I'll be back in 5 minutes. I'll see you guys then.
She has a total of 54 acting credits to this day, and she just became a mother, so of course you have that time frame where you really can't be on set between the pregnancy and the new mother, so I would expect to see her back in shows maybe next year, but it's just a shame that we only got one episode out of her. And if you notice in the scenes, she's kind of hiding something, so kind of a bump.
That would be right. Hey, so the kid was evil, but Vandal Savage, I would say even more evil.
He's the puppet master. He's pulling all the strings to get what he wants.
I'd love to hate that guy.
Yeah, no, he was a good villain, and he wasn't a corndog villain. He was solid villain. The herd must be thin line. I was like, oh, I believe it coming from this guy.
Yes.
Yeah, he is without remorse.
And he alludes to the fact that he knows about the time travel, so at this point in the series, and you would hope so by now, it's 2147, that he has lived through all these past incursions, that he is good to go on the whole time travel thing, and he knows where these guys have been, where they're going, sort of thing, and it gets him the upper hand, really, for strategic planning.
Yeah, he knows what's coming, and he also knew, no, they're not going to kill your son. You know, they're not killers. He's run into them enough times. He has foiled their plans. They have had the opportunity to kill and they've hesitated in the past. He knows what's coming. Now, the question is, has he already made his little agreement with the Time Masters? We don't really know at what point in the timeline he is operating with all this foreknowledge.
That's a good point. I don't know. I had assumed that it had already happened by this point.
So had I.
So he's like, yeah, we're good. This is all going to work out in the end.
Right. So, okay, let me ask you guys this. I know seeing little Aldous Boardman was awesome. It really was. But the whole Carter-Kendra storyline throughout this entire thing, I know it's kind of based on that. The whole series is based on their antagonism with Vandal Savage, but the whole relationship between Rey and Carter and it's not happening or it is happening and who's cheating on who. Like, really, it's not for my demographic.
It's a CW show. They've got to have that drama element from relationships crammed in somehow.
We weren't the target audience for that. Unfortunately, when they were on screen together talking about, you know, maybe it'll be different this time, I just kept thinking to myself, man, Hawkman should be bigger.
Yeah.
And when I'm critiquing the physique based on the comics of the character and not actually listening to what they're talking about, I'm sure it was going on in the periphery. I'm like, yeah, you should be a much bigger guy. Then I ran out of really large bodybuilding type actors that I would actually cast instead. But then again, I'm not a casting agent, so I don't know that many actors.
We could talk about body styles a little bit later in the news section. Just remember, keep that in your mind for later on.
Yeah, I know where you're going to throw that in. Yeah.
But Lowell Aldous Boardman was played by Joshua Jorson. I think he did a great job. It is his only IMDb credit, so it is his only acting gig so far. So for that, he did a great job.
Star Labs took over Star City. That's kind of cool. Corporate city states. I like that.
Yeah, it's neat.
Question is, which Barry Allen entity owns Star Labs at this point in time?
Is it Flashpoint stuff that caused it? Or, oh man, there's so many possible Elseworld things that be going on. My head hurts.
Timey wimey, wibbly wobbly. Stop it. Stop it.
Oh, my brain.
Any other credits from the, or any other points that you guys want to bring up about the episode?
Well, I mean, you got this large ensemble cast, right? And you had the different people going through to talk to Mech. So that was there. But I don't think Stein, I don't think the whole Firestorm team, Jax and Stein, were really used all that much in this episode. I think they had to take a step back. And if memory serves, I think there's 6 remaining episodes. And I think they do have several episodes that are Firestorm centric. So we do have that coming up. But other than Stein taking the forefront a couple of episodes, they've always been pushed to the side. So that's just something that I've noticed in the first 10 episodes. Whether it's true or not, it's just my perception.
I think you're right. I think we do get a lot more Firestorm played up. And as we said, he kind of starts coming to his powers at the end of the season. So I think that's good. Little bits of tech that I really loved. I loved Leonard Snart's heads-up display on those glasses that showed where everything was. I'm hoping he gets to keep those. But speaking of eyewear, so when Captain Hunter has the glasses at the beginning, the contact lenses, and uses them to get in, why didn't he bring a couple extra sets for the rest of the crew? It's just like, oh no, yeah, I'll just try to bluff my way in with the team. Like, Rip, dude, 2 more sets, and this is a done deal.
They could be not easy to reproduce.
Yeah, we are getting close to the point in the series where Gideon's technology is the same technology that's available.
All right, I'll give you that.
Spy gear is not cheap.
It's true.
Future spy gear, less cheap.
How do you think Chuck would have been in this episode? Do you think he would have enjoyed it? Chuck from the NBC show, Chuck, you know.
He'd flash and everything would be taken care of.
It'd be great.
I've never seen Chuck.
Oh. Well, that's okay. If you ever do, go up to the wedding and stop. Don't go any further than that. That's just my personal recommendation.
Fair enough.
Okay, guys, I think that's it for the episode this week. We got a lot of news to cover, so let's just tease people what's coming up next week.
Well, next week, season 1, episode 11, titled The Magnificent 8. Oh, yeah. Air date was Thursday, April 12th, 2016, and the plot summary was the legends travel back to the old Wild West and gain the aid of a true legend, a morally ambiguous gunslinger with a penchant for danger named Jonah Hex.
Yeah, baby.
Which was pretty cool. Director was Thor Freudenthal. Writers, well, we got story by Mark Guggenheim and Greg Berlanti with a teleplay by Mark Guggenheim. So when you're dealing with a classic DC character like Jonah Hex, they're not going to put it in just anyone's hands.
I love that they bring in the Stargate. Thor, buddy! To direct. That's awesome. We've dealt with Thor before.
Yes, we have.
Yes, we have.
Now that we know where we're going next week, let's take a moment and look at all the wonderful references that were inserted in this week's episode. Every week, comicbook.com sends out a little Easter egg sort of article, and we run that down. So, Chris, why don't you start that off for us this week?
So the bulk of this episode takes place in Kasnia in the future. If you weren't aware, Kasnia is a fictional DC Comics nation-state that is basically a stand-in for other things in the Balkan area, such as like Yugoslavia and things like that. Its first appearance was in the Justice League cartoon series, and it has been referenced previously on Arrow, but this is the first time we have seen Kasnia.
And next up is, we've talked about him, Perdegaton. He is a longtime DC Comics supervillain who's battled against the Justice Society, Infinity Inc., and the Time Masters in the comics. His most notable appearances, as far as the series are concerned, was as a member of the organization called the Time Stealers, who opposed Booster Gold and Rip Hunter and tried to take over the Vanishing Point. So, very much at home. You know, the other members of his team included characters we haven't seen yet, Despero, Supernova, the Ultra Humanite, Black Beetle, and Rex Hunter. No relation to Rip. So, it's going to be interesting to see if they reach into canon to pull out some of these other characters.
Interesting. Well, the next one we get, of course, is the Armageddon virus. And I got to tell you, this is the thing that happened when Bruce Willis and Billy Bob Thornton and Ben Affleck broke up the asteroid over Earth and it came down. And then a virus was actually in that asteroid, survived. And that's what? No?
No.
Chris, what is it then?
I like your definition more, I'll be honest.
What in the DC comic lore, what are we talking about?
So there isn't anything specifically called an Armageddon virus in DC lore, but there's the Moritakis, a mutated offshoot of the OMAC virus that is sent back from the future that becomes the deadliest virus known to human history. There was also an Armageddon 2001 crossover event from the 90s, which bears a slight resemblance to the idea behind Legends of Tomorrow, so both of those might be callbacks to some other ideas within the DCU.
The next kind of trope or Easter egg, and I really wouldn't call it an Easter egg, but very much a trope, and we've referenced it already, is the would you kill Hitler trope if you had the opportunity? And almost literally, because quite often Perdegaton is a Nazi in the comics. So, you know, it was even referenced by the characters that, you know, we talk about him as people in your time would talk about Hitler. So a very common recurring trope in sci-fi and in alt fiction.
This is not the first time that Captain Rick Hunter has been face to face with Hitler or a Hitler-like character. Of course, back in Doctor Who, he actually knocked Hitler out. So there you go.
Captain America did too. It's okay.
Whatever works. It's an easy guy to punch.
The next reference, I'll grab this one. They talk about in the flashbacks, Kendra and Hawkman talk about, well, let's go to Coast City. So we've heard about Coast City before. It's, of course, home to the Green Lantern, the comics, and a lot of people have talked about going to Coast City. Don't they have great pizza?
That's what I've been told.
Yeah.
I've been digging, as we did in the episode a couple of weeks ago, really digging the Green Lantern comic thread. The next Green Lanterns comic issue dropped this week, but as Neil and I have discussed before, I'm really more into the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps version versus the Green Lanterns. But since I like Green Lantern and I'm just learning more about it, I have enjoyed both. So that's great. And of course, Coast City, that's where Hal Jordan is from. The next one is such a shame that we don't have anybody from the Crimson Comet in the chat or on board with us today, because of course we're talking about Star Labs. Yes, this is Wells Company. Apparently eventually recovers, and that's what I was asking. Maybe Barry Allen or one of his descendants is in charge of it now, and it has recovered enough not only to excel in the market but basically take over cities. So that's pretty cool.
Next up, we had a reference to White Dwarf Stars material, and if you remember, that is what Ray Palmer uses in the comics and on the TV show to power his size changing suit of armor.
Next up, and I've talked about this before, that Ray should not go out on covert missions. And why is that? Because he cannot think on his feet. He has not played three different scenarios in his head. Again, he couldn't make small talk with Dr. Vostov. He couldn't come up with other ideas on the fly. At least this time he comes up with something. It could have backfired. But when asked who he was, he said, oh, Dr. Lecter, Dr. Hannibal Lecter. So, yes, a pop culture reference from Ray, outshining all the rest of the covert operatives again in the field. Well done, Ray.
Although, if I had to come face to face with Kaylee as my possible great-great-great-great-granddaughter, my mind would be a little spinning too. Just saying.
Fair enough.
So this next one, I'll go ahead and take. It's young Aldous Boardman. I talked about him before. Basically, he is the son that we've seen multiple times in an adult version back, both in the crossover event for Flash Arrow when Legends of Tomorrow was really born, as well as earlier on in the season. Of course, we see his death, and now we see him as a little boy with his parents right before his parents are taken away from him.
Oh,
yeah. Now, there was one that comicbook.com didn't really pick up on, as we got a Star Wars reference. We had Leonard Snart saying, you know, that's the event that turns the little bastard to the dark side. That is a hidden Star Wars reference, not so hidden. But yes, had to call that one out.
Definitely. We've caught a couple of hidden references that haven't been caught by anybody before, like the odds, the 3CPO odds and stuff like that. So there are other references. So if you catch any in the episode that we're watching next week, let us know. Or if you catch any in the episode that we've watched this week that we haven't talked about, go ahead and let us know. And we'll talk about it in the feedback section next week. Moving on off of the Easter eggs into the news, and like I said, we got a lot of it because the TV shows are out there, they're filming, they've gone through their SDCC, their San Diego Comic-Con press releases, and they are in full promo mode. The first article is, I took a look at this and I didn't see anything really new in it, but it was a compilation of stuff. So, Neil, what do we got in here that's new?
You're right. This is an article that came out on Comic Book Resources today, but it was really just a rehash and a summary of some of the SDCC coverage and the interviews with Stephen Amell. So if you missed a lot of piecemeal SDCC, definitely check this out in the show notes. And it just has Stephen Amell going over how he's going to perform as mayor, which is very, very poorly. Thea's role in holding everything together. So she is going to be incredibly critical. Probably both in costume and more so probably out. And the whole theme of Felicity pushing him to recruit a team and how difficult that's going to be, especially the realization. So a really good kind of summary article from Comic Book Resources.
It was.
Yeah, we also got some pretty cool stuff that came out last night on the social media. If you guys are aware, Stephen Amell is pretty vocal and always tweeting, Facebooking, and posting pictures on Instagram. Well, last night, he took a pretty cool Instagram photo. He was on the set of Supergirl up in Vancouver. There's a picture of the Man of Steel himself next to the Green Arrow of Star City. And hey, guys, Stephen Amell is taller than Superman.
And I think bigger.
Yeah.
This is what you were talking about, wasn't it, SP?
This is exactly what I was talking about. Stephen Amell's shoulders are about two times as wide as Superman. And maybe, you know, he doesn't need all that muscle mass because the muscle he has is supercharged on Kryptonian sun or whatever. But, Superman is supposed to be bigger than anybody, and he's not in this case. So just pointing that out, Superman might as well be a Flash in this, a speedster, because that's his body type. He's sleek and he's fast. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, and there's also the fact that Stephen Amell is basically a freak of nature and how jacked he is. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. I mean, but the dude, you've seen his superhero workouts he does online and stuff like that. He's a freak of nature.
And then put them beside Diggle and somebody who has been lifting some serious iron. And it's just like, all right, Diggle is bigger than Superman.
So I had a mind-blowing moment with the guy who plays Diggle. I was watching an old episode of The West Wing from probably the mid-2000s, and it was in the middle of the campaign season for the new for Matt Santos, Jimmy Smith's character he's running, and they're on a bus, and he's talking to someone. I'm like, that sounds like David Ramsey I'm hearing. And I look up, I'm like, it's Diggle, but he's super skinny. He does not have the guns he has now. I was like, huh, you started hitting the gym after West Wing, I guess.
Yeah, so I was at the gym yesterday, and I saw this old BBC show with the guy that plays Director Henshaw on Supergirl. His name is David Harewood, and I'm trying to remember the name of the actual BBC show, and I can't really remember it, but I know that what's-his-face that plays Sherlock and played Khan was
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yep.
Where he was also in that, and they were also young, and I was like, wow. And again, David was so skinny and Benedict was so skinny compared to what they are today. I was like, oh, this has to be something old. So, of course, I couldn't hear it in the gym. You know, you don't have sound going on, that sort of thing. But catch these actors around, these older actors, older, more experienced, I guess, is the way to phrase it. They've been around for a while and you can catch them in some early stuff. And it is phenomenal when you actually see them. It's like, oh, yeah, I know you.
The next story is pretty neat, that Echo Kellum actually came out in an interview. And again, I think this is one of those summary news stories that we had from comicbook.com. But Echo Kellum has actually given us a time frame for when Mr. Terrific is going to suit up. And he basically says he will suit up within the first 9 issues of this season. And you're going to see Curtis fail, but keep striving, keep overcoming adversity. And we've talked about how he's an Olympian and how he has that persistence and that fortitude and that inner strength. And that's what's going to get him through superhero training effectively.
Yeah. By the way, we have to come back to it since we're talking about Echo on this subject. I did see the full trailer, by the way, from SDCC, and I saw who was trying to do the salmon ladder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we mentioned the salmon ladder tease.
Yes, there you go. So if you haven't seen it already, go watch it. It is a funny little moment. Moving on into the next news story. This is something that we've hoped would happen again in the future. And then they said that was a possibility to bring him back. Colton Hayes is in Vancouver. And of course, Neil is stalking him. So, you know, we have exclusive coverage.
Funny story. So walking the dog last night and I see all the big white trailers and I see craft services set up. I'm like, doopy doopy doo. And I see a bunch of people hanging around a chain link fence, all pressing forward. I'm like, please be Arrow, please be Arrow, please be Arrow. But as I approach security, I took a guess and I just looked over. I'm like, once? They're like, uh-huh. Just kept walking. I live in Storybrooke, so it's a 99% chance it's going to be once filming. But
darn.
I always hope they're filming in my neighborhood.
Hope springs eternal, man.
It will happen. I'm certain of it.
This next one has already happened, apparently. Felicity is getting a new boyfriend, and it's me!
Yeah, SP, is there something you want to tell us?
Congratulations, SP.
Scored that one. No. We're talking to on the show Felicity, not the actress. But apparently, this is alluded to all summer long, that Felicity is still alive, but that she has a new boyfriend. Well, they are bringing that story forward, since obviously they must have filmed scenes and they just didn't want it to leak out or something. And the big thing here is, how exactly will Oliver react? Of course, last week we talked about Oliver being focused on being mayor. So I think that is still where his focus is. And he'll, just like Laurel, he'll probably be rooting Felicity on, and then of course the show will seamlessly kill her in a couple of seasons. So I think that's what we have to look forward with Felicity.
Quite possibly.
And the final news story before we transition out of Arrow is that Wendy Miracle, the executive producer and one of the showrunners, has confirmed that Flashpoint will impact Arrow, but it won't have an overriding effect on the entire series. She teases, she says, we're going to have to tune in to actually see what it is, which is basically what you would expect. And it will have a big impact on certain characters, which it does have an impact on, which is kind of circular, but it does make sense. It probably won't impact some characters and will impact others more. I could see Oliver's dad actually being alive for a while. That would have a big impact on Oliver.
That would be cool.
Laura's coming back. Laurel. It's going to be Laurel and Tommy.
Ugh. Tommy, we missed you.
We all forget about him.
It's like the character at the beginning of Mass Effect, right? Jenkins, was that his name? Oh, yeah. Jenkins?
Private Jenkins.
We just so missed him. Yep.
Hashtag, no, I'm not going there.
Hashtag Jenkins lives forever.
Hashtag no Tommy, no Arrow. But no, I'm not going
there. Hashtag no Jenkins, no Mass Effect.
Ooh.
Oh, fair enough. Hey, how about some general TV, DC TV news, guys?
Oh, please be Flashpoint. Please be Flashpoint. Please be Flashpoint.
Hey, guess what?
What?
As part of Flashpoint, Barry's getting new memories. the producers and showrunners of Flash have gone into more details on Flashpoint, and they're saying that, yes, there is an entire new reality created upon the Flashpoint event, which is true. And you would expect, and this is what they've dealt with whenever Barry has changed time before in the last season. It's even stated that you're the only one that will know the difference. So if he screws up time with Flashpoint, experiences something, he'll still remember pre-Flashpoint. And then if he changes it back, he will have to live with the memories of what he changed in the Flashpoint universe. And you just think, you know, they're going to put things back the way they were. Barry is going to have to live with all of that. And you just can't but feel sorry for him.
They like to saddle him with guilt.
Yeah. If it was just The Flash and that was the only show on, and it's in a singular continuity, I could see going down one of the other roads, but no, we can't do it. Not with the interconnected universe that we have now. And this is going to be the prime thing to bring Supergirl in. So I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also looking forward to it to be wrapped up by Christmas time, because we need the Oliver Queen mayoral Christmas party. Miss those. We need one.
Well, speaking of wrapping up Flashpoint, though, the executive producers have also come out to say, don't worry, folks, Flashpoint does not last all season long, but there will be permanent ramifications.
Basically, it means Draco Malfoy is going to be here all season.
I'm okay with that. There was an interview with Draco last week that says, well, people were asking him, I think at SDCC, well, are you playing a villain? And he went, well, they picked me for a reason, didn't they? Mwahaha. He didn't do the villain laugh, but he did say they did cast me for a reason.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. He's got the Voldemort thing, still trying to live through that, trying to get over it. It's probably in therapy, a little post-Voldemort stress syndrome going on.
Well, if you want to find out about Draco Malfoy's life post-book 7, go read Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Yeah, I'm reading it right now.
In script form, right? Do we have anything in the news about Legends of Tomorrow at all?
We do have some stuff. Now, I have to ask before we get into this first piece, did any of you guys watch iZombie?
No.
I am current in iZombie. I actually, one of the SDCC exclusive Pop Funkos was Olivia Moore, or Liv Moore, for a zombie. Huh? See what they did there?
I see what they did there.
I've actually picked up 4 of the Vertigo graphic novels, which are very different than the TV show. So I'm an iZombie fan. And yes, while it's supposed to take place in Seattle, it is also filmed here in Vancouver. So you do run into folks from time to time.
So I was bringing that up because it was announced that Legends of Tomorrow has cast Matthew McCall to play the character of Commander Steel. And if you're an iZombie fan, you might know him from that show.
Yeah, he played Sebastian Meyer. Not a very nice character. But good to get him from that. He's been in quite a few episodes. But you guys all saw him probably very recently, I would guess, in the last week. He was an uncredited random blue shirt in Star Trek Beyond.
Oh, nice.
There were a lot of cameos. I did go see that this week, by the way. And there was just a lot of people that were in there to be in it. And let's face it, guys, it was the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So just like the Christian Slater cameo back in the day, that was basically what these were. And it was good. It was good to see everybody. And it was a good movie.
It was. And it also filmed here in Vancouver. So you had anybody with a SAG card who they needed for these things probably got a bit part.
Quite possibly.
All right. So do we have anything else about Legends of Tomorrow?
Mark Guggenheim has been active on the Twitters again. We know that there's been some news about the Arrowverse stuff that's come out via Twitter, like the announcement of Flashpoint from Grant Gustin earlier this season. Well, Guggenheim also tweeted the JSA logo, that is the Justice Society of America, along with some information that Brandon Routh gave, saying that this version of the JSA is going to hail from the 1940s, which is something that actually ties in correctly with the comic book history of the JSA. I'm very intrigued.
I am too, because Wonder Woman is supposed to be set about this time, but then I think this will be the only period piece that they do in the DC film universe, and then they go ahead up to modern day. So I think they're giving them free reign with the 40s, the time period outside of Wonder Woman. So that's pretty cool, I think.
Well, and Wonder Woman was never in the JSA either, that I can recall.
No, I was just saying it was the only period piece, so it wouldn't conflict with what's going on in the DC film universe.
Roger,
so
that is I got you.
Hey, but there was also a bunch of Supergirl news, so we cherry-picked a couple of stories here. I think the first one is that just today, on August 4th, a bunch of set photos have leaked of Superman on the set of Supergirl fighting with Metallo, or people who they think is Metallo. So Tyler Hoechlin is fighting a villain that's got green, it looks like green kryptonite in the chest, which could be Metallo's humanoid format. So very cool that we're starting to see more and more come out from Supergirl.
That's pretty cool. Now, the one question that I have about Supergirl is how are they going to deal with Calista Flockhart? Is she going to be a reoccurring guest? Are they going to write her off the show? Is she going to eventually move up for the filming season for a year or something like that? Because I would hate to lose her from it. She was such an integral part of the show.
Well, it's good thing you asked, SP, because one of the major Hollywood film sites actually had the same question. And it turns out they got some answers. So, yeah, one of the biggest unknowns has been Calista Flockhart and whether she's going to return as Cat Grant, especially with the budget cut and the move to Vancouver, and the fact that we know they're getting a new editor at Catco. We've talked about that in previous episodes. So it has been confirmed by Deadline that Calista Flockhart still has a contract with Supergirl, and she will be starring in a reduced capacity. And instead of being a series regular, she'll have recurring guest star role in season two.
Well, the good news about that is the way they ended the show in Catco was that Kara Danvers was moving to a different position, so she might not have had to have had daily interaction with Cat Grant. And I think that this could work, and I'm looking forward to how they deal with it. But again, Calista Flockhart was just made for the show, and I was glad to have her in season one, and we'll be glad to see her in whatever capacity.
Agreed.
Yep, totally.
So do you guys... did you guys drive yesterday or today to your local comic book store and pick up some DC Rebirth?
Oh, Rebirth. Oh, yeah, SP. I clicked mightily on the Comixology.
There you go. You can do that, too. You can do that, too. Hashtag beg and board.
Oh, yeah. The great thing is, at the $2.99 price point, even if I have clicked mightily on Comixology, I don't mind spending $3 and picking up a physical copy later on the next time I make it to a store. And that's what I've been doing. I don't feel bad supporting these books on DC that I'm a fan of right now at all. I think they deserve a lot of kudos for the direction they've taken Rebirth.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about that is I do like how Marvel does it, where you buy the physical copy and then they give you a redeeming code, which is not only good for Marvel, but if you link your Marvel account to Comixology, then you get the issue on Comixology as well. And DC has none of that. And I think that's just an advantage that Marvel has. But the advantage that DC has right now is story, because these things are pretty cool. Have you read this week's issue?
Yeah. What we're all talking about, listener, is this week, Green Arrow number 4 dropped alongside a lot of other issues, a lot of other great issues, I should say. So Green Arrow issue 4, writer Benjamin Percy, art by Juan Ferreira. And again, I can't say it enough. Go and check out Juan's Twitter feed. He is posting art. He is posting advance sneak peeks at issues 5, 6, 7, at his uncolored pencils. Yeah, it's just fantastic. The summary for issue 4 was The Death and Life of Oliver Queen, Part 4. Black Canary steps through the deadly gates of Inferno, the global supervillain answer to Fort Knox, to discover the truth behind the destruction of Oliver Queen's life, fortune, and reputation. Meanwhile, Seattle's manhunt for the outlaw Oliver Queen, or sorry, Green Arrow, takes an exhilarating twist when an old frenemy makes an unexpected return. I really dug that interaction. SP, what did you think when that happened?
Yeah, I did. I liked the story. There were a couple of writing cuts, basically, that were very abrupt and was like, whoa, 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 wait, what happens? And you kind of expect that in comics, but I think they were a little bit too abrupt as I was paging through this. But remember that we've lost some pages in these issues. And so to move the story from point A to point B, they do have to make some... jumps in the story is the best way to describe it. But other than that, yeah, this was a good issue to pick up. I really am starting to see some storylines coming together, so that was pretty cool. And it, honestly, it's the only one that I have read so far this week, because I was podcasting on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. last night, and I ran tonight after work, and I didn't have time to read any more. But I'm really looking forward into delving into the rest of them this week. I'm current on all my DC stuff, which is really not the normal for me. So it is that good. So go pick up the DC Rebirth stuff. If you're a little bit behind, Comixology is a great place to go start.
And, you know, we talked about some of the issues in the series that we're reading on our Rebirth special a couple of issues ago here on Starling Tribune. But I can't say it enough, folks. Go and check out Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run. It is awesome. A new issue came out last week in the current timeline. Just fantastic. Like, do yourself a favor, really.
Yeah, the Legends of Wonder Woman series that's been running, it's on a 9-issue series, and they just dropped issue 8 last week as well. That's been pretty cool, too, and that's another origin of Wonder Woman. So if you're gearing up for the Wonder Woman movie next year and you really need a Wonder Woman's origin, the Legends of Wonder Woman is a good place to start as well. So lots of comic goodness. Hey, guys, we got some feedback this week. We got a tweet.
Ooh, very nice.
People love us.
They like us. They really like us.
Oh, it's the internet. They might not like us, actually.
It wasn't just us. He also tagged Crimson Comet. It's Black Adam, of course, listener Adam. On Twitter, he is at StarSaber_222. And he tweeted us that Vixen returns to CWC this fall. Watch the trailer for season 2 here. And we talked about the trailer last week, but I just want to give Black Adam some kudos there. And yes, we love feedback. So go ahead, tweet us, give us a call on our voicemail. And that is at 612-888-CAVE or 612-888-2283. So Chris, we're on this network, and you and I were both on a bunch of podcasts. Neil actually guests on a bunch of podcasts too. But what do we got going on in the network these days?
So we've got a network of about 17, 18 different shows. So there's always tons of cool stuff going on, and you can find pretty much a schedule of all of our live events over at geeks.live and go and watch some of those live events. But each week we do want to try and highlight one specific episode of a podcast on the network. This week we're talking about a little podcast by the name of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. You might have heard of that because our very own Stargate Pioneer is on that as well. And this week in episode 135, they're talking about Daredevil, the episode Penny and Dime. In this episode, Agent Stargate Pioneer and Haley are joined by intern Ferris to discuss the Daredevil season 2 fourth episode, Penny and Dime, and somehow along the way discover that Ferris would be the Punisher if he was a superhero. Check out who wins the latest giveaway and stick around after the show for the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. patented post-show outtakes. So go check that out over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And while you're there, check out some of the other great podcasts that are on the network. That's at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Thank you to everybody that has listened to us live. I see Mike Howard in the chat. We've got Lindsay in the chat. We've got a bunch of people. Roxy's in the chat. And thank you guys very much for coming by. We really appreciate you listening live to this podcast. I know we got Spreaker listeners and we have Facebook Live watcher viewers. So thank you for that. But thank you everybody who's listening to this later that's downloaded the podcast. It is amazing to me the amount of downloads continue to go up every week. And this is the summer off season. So that is awesome. Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. And give us a holler, you know, tell us how you found the show and tell us what you like about the show. We really would like that. But, and we also have the video replay available on our YouTube channel. It is youtube.com/gunnageek. And all the video editing is done by our great video editor, our venerable co-host, Mr. Chris Farrell.
Yeah, editing. It'll be lightly edited this week because life is getting in the way.
And as SP said, thank you to all our live participants, no matter how you've joined in. If you want to join in live, you can join in Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, over on geeks.live, Facebook Live, or Spreaker, or any of the other outlets we're on. And don't forget, after the show, we try to open it up to comments and answer listener questions. So if you've posted in the chats and we haven't gotten to you, don't worry. We're not ignoring you, and we will answer your thoughts.
And so I did touch on it earlier. We have a lot of live streaming that is done by the Gunna Geek Network. That's all over at geeks.live. So you can watch the next live show tomorrow, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, is Better Podcasting. Go to geeks.live, check it out for yourself, and then look at the schedule for all the other shows that we've got coming up. We've got live content 6 days a week most of the time. It's insane, guys.
Great. Hey, don't forget, with these live shows or whatever, we do have normal podcasts, normal downloadable shows, normal viewable shows. So don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We really would appreciate a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps us out a lot when people look at the show and they look and see what other people think of the show. So that would be great. And also like us on Facebook so you can get our notifications of when we're live, when we stream live on Facebook Live. And you can subscribe to us on our YouTube channel and always badger us on Twitter at Starling Tribune.
And if you want to leave us a voicemail and you want to hear what you sound like on the interwebs, you can always call us and leave us a voicemail. We have a phone number set up for just that purpose. It's 1-612-888-CAVE. That's 1-612-888-2283. Or record your voice and send in an MP3. And we'll make sure to play your voicemail or your message on the show, assuming we don't have to edit it too heavily. Before we sign off, guys, if our listeners just cannot get enough of you two, where can they find you, SP?
Well, you know, I'm all over the GunnaGeek.com network, but I just want to throw out a plug, really. If you have a show, if you have something that's geeky related, even if it's marginally geeky related, we're always looking for new shows on the network. Just go to GunnaGeek.com/join and you will see the application. And in order to go into our review committee to be part of the network, we would love to have you on board.
Awesome plug, SP. Chris, where can they find you?
Just go on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. You'll find all the shows that I'm on or guest on and everything there. Pretty much that's the keys to the kingdom to find any of us is GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Great. Guys, fun hanging out and talking some Legends of Tomorrow with you guys. That about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the unedited comments for the after show? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag I am Felicity's boyfriend.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag evil robots from the future are scary.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with hashtag we get Jonah Hex next week. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.